So, hello, I'm here with Emma Vario. So, do you want to start by introducing yourself?
Yeah, hi. Like you said, I'm Emma. I work at Frozen Bite currently, and we'll go through my journey there. But I'm the lead designer, or lead UX designer there, currently also the only official UX person within the company, so that's keeping me busy.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But yeah, I've always loved games, and when I grew up and I went to university, I found out about UX and found out that that's a really cool thing. So here at Frozen Bite, I get to do both of my dreams, both the childhood of doing games or making games and then making things usable. So this is a dream come true.
It's kind of what we all dreamed, right, when we were little.
Yeah.
And so can you talk a bit, I always like to ask in the beginning, what's the first game you remember that really inspired you or that kind of motivated you to do something in gaming?
Yeah, so I remember playing a lot of educational games like maths and stuff, but the first game that I remember, like the name of and everything that happened, is Final Fantasy VIII. I really love puzzle games, but I was not good enough at English to play them when I was that small. But Final Fantasy VIII, I didn't need to understand the language that well to get really far in the game. So I would just make up what they were talking about and what was happening and then just fighting my way through. And that was just so phenomenal, seeing the cutscenes and what was going on. And like, even though I was making up the story, there was a lot of story to make up at the time.
Oh, cool. I remember Final Fantasy VIII, of course. It's such a great game. And personally, I played Final Fantasy VII before VIII, but it was one of those things where, because I played Final Fantasy VII, it was an automatic buy, Final Fantasy VIII. And like we talked about before, like a lot of people didn't really like it. Mm-hmm. But to me, it still holds a special place, kind of. I loved it. So that's really cool. And so what did you study in school to kind of take you on this path? Or
All through up to high school, I studied basically what everyone studied. I grew up in a smallish town, so there wasn't too many electives to choose from. So I took home ec and French or something. I've forgotten all my French, which has been very unfortunate here in Lille. But when it came time to decide what we're going to study in university, I knew that I liked maths and I liked languages, but I didn't like either enough to just study them. Like studying maths, I would be a maths teacher, and I, like, at that point I hated teenagers and I hated like children, so I didn't want to be stuck with them forever. And I realized that I could combine them in software engineering and programming.
Cool.
And because there was still a lot of stories of like these great programmers that made games, so that was for me the natural way to get into games as well.
Yeah, it was the same kind of for me, because I also come from a time when that was the thing. Like all the big games were made by a programmer or a couple of programmers and maybe an artist or something. And that's also the reason why I studied programming, for sure. So that resonates. And so how was it in Helsinki, like in that little town? How was gaming there? Did you have arcades? Did you have friends that had consoles, or what kind of stuff did you play back then?
Actually, I didn't live in Helsinki then.
Yeah,
I was living in a town called Salo.
Salo, okay.
Which is between, like, well, the bigger cities in Finland, but, like, in itself, it's nothing.
A small city, small town.
There weren't too many. There were, like, I would play with friends and neighbors and stuff. Like, anyone who had a console, we would gather around and play together. I think at my home we had an NES.
Oh, awesome.
And then my brother at some point got a PlayStation 2. So I ended up skipping a lot of Nintendo games that I've come to love as a grown-up, like all the Zeldas and stuff. But yeah, I was always playing PlayStation games growing up once we got that.
Oh, cool. And so do you trade games then with friends, or whoever had PS2s in your neighborhood, you would swap out games and stuff like that.
Pretty much, but it was also a culture of getting together and playing together. Even though they were single player games, we would either hot seat, so swap the controller, or just watch one person play it and get together.
It's funny that like I remember that too. When I was growing up in Egypt, somebody would buy a game and we would all go to his or her house and, like you said, pass the controller around when it got too hard for someone or when they finished a certain part of the game. It's funny how that kind of has gone away with the internet, but still exists somehow for couch games. Like, it's coming back.
That's true. And for PC games, we did a lot of swapping because for whatever reason, that didn't lend itself as well or readily to watching it together. I think it was because it was on a PC.
On a desk,
Whereas the consoles were on a TV, so the environment lent itself for people gathering around to watch it.
And so you studied software engineering in uni, and you mentioned something about usability as well.
Yeah, like I said, I thought software engineering is the way to get to games, which, as we'll talk, it did not initially. But in university, I found out about this thing called usability. And I'd already figured out that I was different from many of the other programmers at university, where when we would use the software to like write code, I would get frustrated because I couldn't find the settings or the things that I wanted to do, whereas everyone else kept saying, oh, you just need to learn to use it, and then it'll be fine. And then we had this starter course on usability, and it clicked. I'm like, no, this is important to me, and this is what I want to do. And why can't everyone see that this is the greatest thing ever? So I started focusing on that and ended up studying almost a lot more of that than software engineering, to the point that I could choose which one would be my major by the topic of my thesis, which ended up being for software engineering because I got paid to do that. So that was a no-brainer. But other than that, I would have loved to do a usability thesis.
Yeah, that's great. It's great that it was an option. Like in my case, it wasn't even an option at all, usability. I didn't get exposed to it until I started working, really. Mm. And so it's really great that you got at least a starter course in it, which is really amazing. And so you were, and I guess your software engineering, how does that help your usability work?
It helps quite a lot in many interesting ways. First and foremost, I get to translate between people. Like, I can talk to designers and artists as well as programmers. And I thought that everyone could do this, but then I witnessed an exchange where they were talking about the same thing, but with different words. And at some point, sometimes they were using the same word for different things and vice versa. And it was really awkward. So I just stepped in and said, this person means this, and this person means that. And they were like, oh, so we're agreeing. Yes, you are.
Problem solved.
Things are great. So that helps. Also, there have been incidents at work where a lot of things are hard-coded. So there was a wrong shade of green, for example, used in something in the UI for 9 parchments that I worked on. So before, it was always that you had to make a task and then wait for the programmer to get to it, and I just skipped all of it, changed it, and got it done. And it was really useful because I could understand code enough to do little bits like that, but I didn't want to like do more, mostly because I had enough on my plate already, and also because if I broke something, that would be very awkward.
So it kind of lowered iteration time in a sense. Like, oh, that's really cool.
For some things, yeah.
And so when you graduated, you graduated as a software engineer with a major in software engineering.
Yeah.
Can you tell us about your first job or the first thing you did after school?
Actually, in Finland, and I think at least in programming, it's usual to get a job while you're still studying and sort of like transition quite softly to workforce. So as I said, I got paid to do my thesis, so I was already working for the company that I stayed in after I graduated. It was a bespoke company, so doing outsourcing. Things that I did was I wrote scripts that we could send via Wi-Fi to update slot machines I wrote UI code for controlling big machinery in factories and all these interesting and very difficult things, and it was fun to do.
Super cool. So kind of gaming already, if you count slot machines as gaming.
Sort of, but not
some people count it.
Yeah, but just updating the underlying software, so not as exciting as you'd hope.
Yeah. And so you were a programmer there, and what kind of languages did you program in? Or
I don't remember all the scripting things I used, but mostly the languages that I wrote code in was C sharp.
Which is, I guess, still relevant for if you're a Unity dev, kind of. And you is Trine made in Unity?
No, we have our own engine.
Oh, cool.
And that's done in C++.
Okay.
Which is something that I'd learned in university. And it was the first language that we used, which is very useful, because learning then languages like C sharp and things that have garbage collection, it's just like just not using everything that you know. Instead of going the other way around, you have to learn more things and
memory
be more
management.
Mindful.
Yeah. Yeah. It's one of the things that I, when I was hiring people for my previous jobs, I would often have to hire people that studied only Java or .NET C sharp in schools. And then you would have to teach them everything about garbage collection and how that memory management and how that works. And there were often people that weren't very aware of how to do that. But it's, I guess, really good that you studied that in uni.
And actually, it was funny because my brother went to a different university in the same town in Tampere in Finland. And they started with Java, and then they learned C++ later on. And he was just freaking out because he didn't understand what was wrong. And I just went through his code, and like after
memory leak.
You have to release memory here. You have to release memory here. And that was all I did. And then he passed the course, and he was so thankful. But that kind of highlighted that, like, the order in which you learn the languages is very, like, impactful.
Oh, cool. And so after that, after your job programming at this outsourcing company, what did you do next?
At this point, I moved town. I got to Helsinki, where I am now, because my then boyfriend, now husband, was working there. And for, I think, 6 months, he went back and forth every day, I think, well, 3 days a week or something. So we woke up at 5:30.
Oh, God.
And he would get home, I think, after 10 p.m.
Oh, geez.
So I just got sick of that, and I thought, you know what? Programming is a job that I can do anywhere, so let's just start looking. And I found a job through a friend of a friend doing business-to-business integration, which was slightly different but still very IT-based.
Yeah.
That was an experience.
I guess most people, when they think about programming, they think about all the really charming stuff, like the games and the websites, but probably if you would research, you'll find that the majority of programmers are doing like business to business integrations and or connecting databases with each other and all sorts of stuff. I understand how that could be a step, I guess, in your career.
Yeah.
And how was that?
I found that to be super boring, and all the credit to people who like that, but as I am now a UX designer, I've always been more drawn to doing things that I can see happening, so doing front-end stuff and UI stuff. So making data move in the background was just excruciatingly painful. I was also very unlucky in that the clients that I was working with often had to wait for okay, so there was a lot of downtime. So it was boring, and because I didn't actually do anything at work. But luckily, we had an internal product team doing integration software. So I transitioned to that one to do more programming again and like work on the product. And that was more
fun. Oh, cool. So in the product, you worked more on front end stuff, or?
Yeah, I got to work a little bit on everything, and that was also a bit of a problem for me because they had been working on that product since the 80s, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And the team had always been very small, and that hadn't grown very long or very much. So I think I was the fourth person on the team, And they had learned everything as they were building the product. So they thought that that was the way that I would learn as well. But at this point, there was, I don't remember, but some web page front end that I hadn't, like, I'd never done web programming before. So there was a little bit of that. And then there was C# on the back end. So I was doing tiny little bits here and there that was the way they had learned it, but there was too much to learn. So I forgot the thing that I worked on two things back. And I was not gaining the understanding of the product.
So do you feel that you didn't really have ownership over part of the product, or you were too scattered kind of all over the product?
I was kind of scattered. And as I left that job, we discussed it. Actually, we started discussing it as we were hiring the next person, that we hired a fifth person when I was still there. And we decided that in the future, new hires would get to focus on one thing. And once they feel very comfortable doing that and others trust them to be able to work on that, then they can move on to the next thing. Because the goal was that everyone can work on everything. So if someone gets sick or quits or something, there isn't a gaping hole that no
redundancy.
One can fill. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. And so after that job, where did you go next?
That job... I ended up wanting to leave because I was very UX-minded. And because the team wanted to do the redundancy thing and no one, like everyone else, was more tech-oriented, it caused tensions between us. And then I was offered a job to try out robotic process automation, which is a growing field now. I kind of jumped at it. They gave me more money and it was exciting. So, yes, it was... a really interesting and cool thing. And again, my usability side got to do service design there. And that was a very cool experience.
Awesome. And do you remember what kind of games you were playing during that period? Or like when you had moved to Helsinki and you settled down in your new city?
Yeah, I had always loved, like ever since Final Fantasy VIII, really big single player experiences, very narrative driven. But around these, like at this point, I think I didn't have that much time to focus on things because I was, well, learning robotic process automation, like a new job and everything. So that required a lot of my energy. So I was playing mostly things like Candy Crush.
Cool. I'm still games.
Yeah. But like not as heavy as I like usually loved. And the way I identified as a gamer, it felt really weird talking about the games I played because they weren't the games that I wanted to be playing.
Sorry. Yeah.
Even, like, they're still great games, and I like playing them, obviously, but, yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, everybody has periods. I still find myself today going through periods where I play loads of games and then don't play games at all, and then something new comes out, and it kind of re-triggers me. Also, being a parent now, it's harder to find time, and it comes and goes in waves. So I also, if I look back at my life, I've had periods where I was focused on, I don't know, clubbing, and I wasn't really gaming at all. And even though it's been kind of a common thread in my life, I understand how that can ebb and flow.
And you know, I actually plan for that a little bit because I'm a new parent now. And I planned because I'd been waiting for Kingdom Hearts 3 for the entire 10 years that they were making it. I decided that this would be my last hurrah, and I only had 2 days to take off work, but I'm like, no, these 2 days and the weekend that come after.
Kingdom Hearts.
Yes, it's all that all the time. I might sleep in between, eat a little bit. I think I set alarms to eat to remember to do that. And it's like, this is the last time for a good while that I get to do this, because I did do that in university sometimes. Like
Binge games.
Yeah, at least for Final Fantasy XIII, when it came out, it was a week of that. Yeah. And that's when I learned that if I'm binge gaming, I need to set alarms to
it. I've done it a couple of times when the Metal Gear comes out or something, and I would just, okay, world off. I'm now going to experience this and see how it is. And so how did you finally get into games then?
Yeah, that's sort of an interesting story. As we had both graduated at Tampere University of Technology, before moving to Helsinki, we kind of struggled to make good friends. Like, I think, and that's been a common problem for a lot of my friends, that once you, like, sort of grow up and you go to work, it's harder to make new friends. At university, you're hanging out, it's more organic.
Mm.
And we were talking about this during one of our anniversary dinners that, you know what, maybe we should move back to Tampere because there were a lot of our friends there. And I realized, okay, if we're actually going to do that, this is my last chance to get like a games job here, because at that point there were more games companies in Helsinki.
Mm-hmm.
There still are, but there are bigger games companies in Tampere as well, so that could be an option now. And Frozen Byte had an opening for, or an open application to design, and essentially they had a task to do, like send your application with this assignment, and that was an expert review and also possibly a user test of the demo of Trine 2. So that was basically right up my alley. I'd been doing that in university a lot. So I just like, I poured my heart into that one. I did cool. that really well. I wrote the documentation, like I set priorities on the findings and everything, and I sent it in. And they were really swamped and they were at a really poor spot, like financially, the company at that time. So they got back to me and they told me that, you know, that was a really great application. We would really like to have you, but we can't at this point, which I took to mean we just don't want you, because that was my experience from other companies. Yeah. But a while later, I think it was a year later or something, they got back to me. They asked me if I was still interested.
So they remembered you. They didn't forget. That's great.
And that blew my mind.
Yeah.
And at that point, I was getting burned out at my current employer at the time, because it was a very small company still. It didn't grow as fast as we were getting clients, so there was too much work. So I was getting burned out, and this was my dream job twice over. So
easy choice.
Let's just see where this goes.
And so did you play all the Trine games then to kind of get ready for that job? Or?
No, I haven't finished all of them yet.
Okay.
But I have been working on playing through all their games. I did play some of them, and I do love them. They're very beautiful, the Trine games, and I love the puzzle element and the fact that you can take your time with them.
Yeah.
So that was really nice.
Yeah. Personally, I remember the very first Trine. Did it come out in 2012 or something? Somewhere around that. Because I remember I was at WWDC, so I was in an Apple conference in San Francisco, and I had just bought a new MacBook because I needed a laptop, and I didn't have one with me, so I bought one at the Apple store there. And I installed, first thing I did was install Steam, like, what is there that runs on this thing? And Trine was one of the games that had just come out that ran well on a MacBook Air, so I downloaded it. And the first thing I realized is, or what I, how I saw it was Space Vikings, Lost Vikings. Mm. There was this game on SNES that was made by Blizzard, I think, a very long time ago. And it was similar to Trine, as in it was a side platformer with puzzle elements. And when I saw that, I was like, oh my God, this is like the spiritual successor to Lost Vikings. And straight away dumped all my time in it, and that was kind of my introduction to Trine. But so what kind of games did you work on there at Frozen Byte?
Actually, I was hired to work on the tools when I was first hired, so they've been working on the same editor and engine for a long time, and they have they've always had an in-house one. But the usability of that has been a bit finicky, and because the front end is done on C#, and I could work in C#, so they thought, okay, I know usability, I know the programming thing, so I could do that basically on my own, and there were easy wins to be gained there. But as I was doing research on, like, I was trying out different editors and engines and everything to find out what was the standard or standards and where to go, there was growing interest among some programmers to help out with the thing. So that ballooned into, let's make a completely new editor.
Cool.
Which we still haven't really done. Because after a few months, I was put into Nine Parchments that came out in 2017.
Mm-hmm.
to quickly go over the menus, and I'm doing air quotes here. I was given a month to like give a stamp of usability approval, and they would implement them, and they would be in the game all within a month. And I think 7 months later,
oh my god,
I got out of that project.
Yeah, that's like also a very common thing where people are like, oh, just give it your stamp of approval or something. And then all the work that comes out of it is way too much to do.
Yeah. And I think, well, I don't know how much is like general preconceptions and how much is that I was brought in to do just the UIs for nine parchments, but I'm still seen as the UI person by many people in the company. So I'm kind of trying to work my way into like explaining that usability is a lot more than just where the settings are.
Yeah, I always joked with my friends. It's like, I make the things that you see when you pause the game when you're going for a pee. Like, that's what, when people ask me, which part of the game do you work on? And that's kind of my short answer always as a joke.
That's a really good answer. We've been talking about this. We announced Starbase that I haven't actively worked on. Like, I've been doing background stuff to help and support people. But there, it's a very big game, and there are people who are very excited to say, like, you know what? Those asteroids, I made them. Mm. Or I made this entire system, and now you can play with it. Mm. And then when it's my time to tell what I did for a game, it's like, I made it so that you don't hate playing it.
Yeah, it's one of the most important jobs, of course, in our opinions.
But, yeah. And obviously, if you get it wrong, people are going to notice. But when you get it right,
people don't. Yeah, it's always the sign like that you've done it right, that people don't have feedback at all about it.
Pretty much.
Same goes, I guess, for audio design, kind of. People will only talk about it if it's either really exceptionally great or if it's broken.
Pretty much, yeah.
And so before Trine, what else did you work on there?
After Nine Parchments and the DLC for that, I was told that I would be put on Trine 4. But there was also another game that came out within like the last month or so. So they were happening simultaneously, called Boreal Plague. It was done by a very small team over a very long period of time. So I, like, again, I was put in, and I kind of volunteered to go in and help out with any sort of usability
things. Emma the savior, Beck.
Oh, gosh, no. It ended up being like, okay, you know what? Redesign the menus again.
Oh, God.
And that was good in a sense because they'd been working as a small team for such a long time. I ended up doing a lot of work trying to just figure out what's going on in the game because they all knew everything. They had difficulties communicating it to outsiders. So me going in kind of paved the way to help our writers who came and helped out with the writing and marketing team so they wouldn't have to start excavating all this information once it was really close to launch.
So a fresh pair of eyes, I guess, at the right time. Oh, that's great as well. And so Trine 4, then, it's coming out next week, right?
Yes, on the 8th.
So probably when you hear this, it's already out, something like that.
Depending on your timeline,
I'll see how fast I can get this out. But so how was that, working on that game?
Oh, that was so much fun. That was the first time our studio had a UI team put on the game early on. Like I said, with Nine Parchments, I was put on to like check the menus very quickly toward the end. And I think artists, once they had done all their other work, the ones who cared were starting to design menus. Mm. And this time we had a dedicated UI artist and me as a UI designer that were focusing on those. And we did prototyping and planned things and tested things out early in production so that we could have more experience-like menus or have like more accessibility taken into consideration. And that was so much fun. And officially, I was a UI designer because that's what people understood, but I did a lot of expert reviews and like general usability things as well for the game. So that was
amazing. And yeah, I can't wait to play it. I really want to give it a go, and so I'm definitely going to install it. So do you have any advice that you can give people that are like yourself, I guess, trying to or are now trying to get into the games industry in Finland, maybe in your hometown or where you're from? because hopefully like people all over the world will hear this and hopefully it will inspire them to get into the games.
Yeah, I've been thinking about this because I kind of feel like I cheated my way in, because the general truth that's given is that have a portfolio ready and like make games, go to main jams. I did none of that. I was very lucky with like the job ad that I responded to. But one idea that I would like to send out is that you don't need to draw. That's one of the things that I was very, very hesitant with, partially because I've been looking at friends doing UX on web pages, and they have to do both the visual design and the UX design, and that's very married in my mind. And I thought, you know, I can't draw for, like, the images I do are gray boxes on top of screenshots from games, and they don't look good at all. So I've always felt inferior and kind of ashamed of that, but you don't need to be able to do that. As a UX designer, you just need to understand how things click and why they click. And you can build a portfolio on analyzing games and why they work, why they don't. But if you redesign things, there are always games that you can do better. But you have to be respectful when you're redesigning them, especially if you're putting it out online, because you don't want to bash things. People really do their best for every game, for every product. So.
I like to hope that people are also open to stuff like that, because personally, when I see on Pinterest or on ArtStation someone grabbing a game that I worked on and butchering it, like redesigning it, it kind of, I mean, of course, I try to be as open as I can with it, and I think people should be, because of course, the person that's doing that doesn't have go through all the stuff that you go through when you're making the game, and he doesn't have to. So personally, I really love it when I see such a different perspective on something. And I think it's a great way to do stuff. Like recently, I saw one about Battlefield 5. Actually, I saw a guy had posted an article where he, as a graduation thesis, during his graduation thesis, had redesigned a part of the UI, and I shared it with the team, and we kind of discussed it, and that's, I think, super valuable. So
I would definitely
also agree with that. Do it.
Yeah, I agree with you, and I am not ashamed at all to admit that I have sort of stolen a design that a fan made for Nine Partners. I think it was a save menu or something. They redesigned it completely because they thought that they could do a, like a better job than the original one, and they did. I made it like better, obviously, because, you know, I have to put myself up a little
professional.
Bit. But I had no trouble seeing that this is a way better design. Let's see if we can make it slightly better and then put in our game, because we were making a DLC anyway.
Oh,
so
cool.
That was a really good job. But if they'd come in just saying that our original thing was horrible and why are we so bad at this, I wouldn't have been as happy to do that.
Yeah,
but
course.
They were saying, oh, you know what, maybe this could be better.
Mm-hmm. That's great. And so how can people find you? Can they find you online? Or?
Yep, I am on LinkedIn. Emma Vario there. And better, hopefully, on Twitter. It's E-E-Vario, so V-A-R-J-O. It's a bit difficult to pronounce it in English, but yeah.
I'm also, I hopefully will get better at Twitter too. But now that I have a son, I tried not to spend much time on there. So
that's true.
All right. It's been really great to interview you. Thanks for doing this. And we are now at Game UX Summit. So hopefully we're going to have way more inspiring talks to listen to. And thank you for doing it.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks. Okay. Bye, everyone.
Bye.